Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Italian artist Luca Barberini, renowned for his innovative signature mosaic style of art that gives a contemporary voice to an ancient mosaic language and technique. Luca was born in Ravenna, Italy, a city world famous for brilliantly preserved ancient mosaics that tell stories of the history and vibrant cultural identity of generations of communities. Luca graduated from Ravenna Institute of Mosaic Art in 2000. He continued his studies with practical experience in mosaic studios in Ravenna, and then founded the studio workshop Coco Mosaico with his wife Arianna Gallo in 2005. Luca's artwork has been featured in exhibitions at the Ravenna Museum, in solo and group exhibitions in national and international venues, such as Bologna, Rome, Venice, Frankfurt, and Japan. In 2005, he won the Young Artists and Mosaic Awards and participated in an artist residency for an international symposium on mosaic art through the Egyptian Academy of Rome. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, too. Hello, everybody.
What was it like growing up surrounded by the magnificent mosaics Ravenna is so renowned for? And when did you realize your passion for speaking the ancient language of mosaics?
So, actually, my passion of this medium was not really in the beginning. I was really fascinated by photographs, especially sports and art photographs. But on the age of 14, I had to choose my favorite school. And in Ravenna, we are lucky because we have two different art schools. One is called Liceo Artistico, and the other one is called Art Institute for Mosaics. In the Mosaic Art Institute, they had a photograph studio. I decided to attend the Mosaic Art School because inside it was possible to work on photographs. And that was my first experience with mosaics. So I learned mosaics from the past. I studied a lot of technique from the past. And then little by little, the mosaic art started to be with me. After the school, when I was 19, I started to work like a photographer in a sports situation, like snowboard, skateboard, surfboard. I know surfboard in Italy by my side in the Adriatic Sea is not so super, but it was my passion. So that was my way to do art. But at the same time, the mosaic medium, the mosaic technique was in my brain. But at the time, I decided to continue the mosaic art, just a job. So I decided, I know this knowledge, I learned from the past, so I can start with a professional school where I can try to live with this job. And so in that professional school, I met my wife, Arianna. And after 4 years of school, we decided to open our own studio in Ravenna. At the beginning, my vision of mosaic was a kind of artisanal vision. So not really concerned with contemporary art or the full expression of myself. It was the classic artisanal job. But day by day, I tried to use the mosaic medium and make a connection with the world of photograph. And so I started to make this mix. And I start for the first time to improve my personal art with the mosaic. Of course, I had all the knowledge about the techniques, the materials, everything about mosaics, and also everything about photograph. I tried to make a good mix, and now I'm in the art book of mosaic art, also in some book of art specifically for mosaic and contemporary art too.
Your personal artworks are very colorful narratives that do masterfully combine two languages, the ancient mosaic and the contemporary mosaic. Can you give us some examples?
So Via di Roma 136 is a permanent art wall in my studio and is an art collection of little windows. I represent in these windows the daily life of my day, of something that I'm inspired by the newspaper, by some TV show, but inspired by my life. And when I work on this window, I try to represent subject, actions, people. And probably the ancient mosaic artist, I mean from the Roman period or Byzantine period, like in front of my studio, I have the Basilica of Santa Apollinare Nuovo from the 4th century. There, mosaics tell stories. So, of course, it's the story of Jesus Christ and all the other saints all together. So, the story of Jesus and was designed, the description by mosaics, because the mosaics are forever painting. It's not possible to damage like the painting on the canvas or on the wall because it's stone or glass pieces. So, they are forever. And they tell and they represent stories. I do the same thing in my art. In the little works, like in the Via di Roma 136, in this catalog project, or also the other works, bigger, like Chlorophylla. Do you remember Chlorophylla?
Yes.
The big work with the carnivorous plants eat human beings. No?
Yes, I remember.
This is a kind of a story. So, like once, the mosaic artist from the 2,000 years ago, they were storytellers because it was the only way to transfer the meaning and the story. And I try to do the same now with this ancient art, but speaking about our days.
And how is the process different? You've got an innovative technique and style of using the same materials, but a different process. Can you explain a little about that?
Yes, so you can think about a face of some saints represented in our church, on the wall of our church from the 4th century. To make that face, they used 100, 150 little pieces that we called tesser. And the material is marble or is glass. I represent the same face, for example. I can do the same saint, but using only 5 pieces. So I use the same material. I use the same technique. I mean, the way to fix the pieces into cement or into the glue. This is the same action, and this is the same materials, but I change the way to represent it. I don't need 100 pieces. I need only 5 pieces. That is my way. It's really a conscious translation from the ancient, but maintain the same materials and the same technique.
That conscious translation from the ancient is something that the team of artists and the teachers, as well as Zariana, will use in the studio. Can you tell us a little about some of the courses that you have there and some commissions?
In fact, me and my wife, we are in 2 different jobs. So I'm in my art studio where I produce my personal art and I do my research. And Arianna follows all the commission's work, so works on demand for clients or customers. And also she attends and she teaches the mosaic for classes. We have students from all over the world. We have 1 week, more or less, sometimes there are 2 weeks per month, where people come from really all over the world, from Canada, from the United States, from Australia, from Saudi Arabia, everywhere. We have 10, 8 people every month, and they learn mosaics from the beginning. Sometimes they are really beginner, so they never use mosaics, and also they didn't know also the materials, the technique, nothing, like zero. And they start to produce their own mosaics, follow my wife. She is a really good teacher, especially for beginner, because it's like teach with the kids, because everyone had the experience, paintings, for example, or try to build something with the wood, maybe. But with mosaics, it's really rare. So it's a really good experience. Then we have also expert mosaic artists. They come here to learn the way to translate their own project or some pictures, some oil painting from them or from other artists. So a different kind of class, beginner and advanced.
And some of the other translations are commissioned for various other organizations. Do you have clients that have particularly interesting commissions?
Sometimes we have artists who ask us to translate their painting into mosaics. And this is really interesting because it's the classic mosaic job for the Ravenna Studios. If you see on our modern art museum in Ravenna, where they have the collection of the modern mosaics made in the 30s by the studios here in Ravenna, and from that time they translate the painting of the famous artist. like Severini, Chagall. And so these famous artists came to Ravenna, asked the studios to translate, to transfer their painting into mosaics. And we're still doing. So sometimes we had collaboration with famous artists like Valerio Adami. He is a really important Italian artist, famous all over the world. Or some American artists like Domingo Zapata from New York, or Olimpia Zagnoli, for example. She's a really famous illustrator. You can find their work on the New York Times, for example, or the famous magazine in the world. And she is a designer and an illustrator. So sometimes these artists ask us to do this translation for some private clients or for exhibition. For example, Domingo Zapata, he asked to translate 8 works for the Venice Biennale in 2013 for a personal exhibition. Because sometimes artists need to translate, to try to use another medium, not only painting or not only ceramic or not only sculpture, but also mosaics. Of course, in the studio, we work also with the architect, for example, hotels or public space, but also private home. Architects send us the design with all the dimension, and we prepare panels. Sometimes are just one panel, sometimes are like a puzzles. So there are many pieces that we ship, and someone there connect each other to make it the final design.
Do you take many students from other programs or other artists to maybe do an internship and get involved with some of your work to give them more experience and expand their practice?
Yes. Sometimes students come here, they start to have a really good relationship with the mosaic technique, and we have some sample of students that open their own studio somewhere, like in France, in Britain also, and in Chicago, for example. Of course, they are beginner, they have to try, but people are amazing. Sometimes they just learn the first technique and they start, and they spend years and years to work in mosaics. It can be a job for them.
Can you take us to the back of your studio, to the Lego mosaics that you have
there? Ah, yes.
And where did this idea come from?
The idea, it was to start a provocative reaction and provocative sign for a theme that I'm really interested. The theme is the climate change. I represent one work, the water cover all the globes, and the people need to survive on the boat, on the sea, and they have to cultivate the grass and vegetables and trees on the boat because there are any land. And so that is sad. That is probably a kind of future. And that is so sad and it's so strongly. But it's also people speak about this problem every moment now, everywhere. I want to push more than these, not only speak. So I decided to put this kind of future and transform this concept in toys. And someone can see that is not good, no? Because toys is just for play. And this is my provocation. So my studio for 2 months was a kind of temporary shop of this future. The word of this project, the title of this project is Lego. But for us in Italian, Lego can be read also the ego, because I put the apostrophe after the L. So when the Italians or European, also France and Spanish, can read the title of the boxes, they don't read the classic name Lego. They read the ego, because the ego is the consequence of this kind of future. This is why I decided to do this project. That is pretty complicated to explain. It was a really limited series, only 30 boxes, because the work was divided in 6 panels. Each panel was translated in 5 limited boxes. So in the total, it was 30 ego boxes. And it's a really kit. It's not only a conceptual work. It's also inside there is a really kit. So if someone buys these art boxes, they can decide to do it or conserve a work of art. The collector conserves the box like I did without open. They maintain the value of my art If they open, they destroy my art process. So the box is not virgin anymore. So they lose my art and they start their own art. The title, The Ego, starts to be a game. So in the end, the collectors can try to do it. This is just a trick with the name, with the title of the boxes.
Very innovative. That's fabulous.
It was really interesting. It was my first project in this way. Usually my art is classic art exhibition where you can go in the gallery and you can see all the works on the wall. That was only a shop, a temporary shop, but of art products. I was really excited about it.
Do you have any more art projects coming up like that?
Like that? Not for this year. Now I'm working for an art festival in Bologna, is the capital city of my region, for the end of the next month. It's a contemporary art show. It's really important for the North Italy. But I'm not planning to do Lego boxes. I'm working for an exhibition, but in 2021 in Tokyo. And there, probably, I'll work with the new Lego boxes.
I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and insight with us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure for me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was Italian artist Luca Barberini speaking with us from Coco Mosaico Studio in Ravenna. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is London-based sculptor Sadek Ben David, well known for his sculptural installations around the world, from remarkable indoor museum installations and boxworks to large-scale outdoor sculptural installations in major sculpture parks and festivals along exotic ocean coasts. Many of his sculptures are composed of thousands of intricately, meticulously carved figures, mainly in steel. Sadek was born in Yemen in 1949, immigrated to Israel, studied and taught art in London at St. Martin's School of Art. He has exhibited his work extensively throughout the UK, Europe, the US, Asia, and Australia in leading national museums, prestigious art biennales, and major art fairs and festivals. Sadek is a recipient of many awards and prizes and has artworks in significant private and public collections worldwide. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you. You're very well known for your sculptural installations around the world, and leading up to these significant pieces, you seem to have been drawn to the scientific and creative explorations of imagination, innovation, and increasing knowledge in your early works. Can you tell us about some of your early discoveries and any dynamic turning points in your early career?
I'll be happy to. I trained at St. Martin's School of Art. That was my last year in advanced course of sculpture. And the sculpture were under Antoni Caro, Philip King, very well-known British sculptors at the time. My work at that time was abstract in metal and concentrated in abstract expressionism, which based a lot on intuition. There was a big argument at the time whether idea should be in sculpture or whether you should work with your intuitivity. As soon as I left school, I was in England, which was coming from Israel, which is a different culture, different weather, different language, which was not easy. I almost had to learn the language again. Almost all the English I knew was forgotten. And when you talk with basic language every day, you start thinking about the basic thing, and you kind of reduce a lot of expression and words that you wouldn't use because you don't know them. I have to tell you that the English language is so rich that you can get away with murder, you know, with words. It's affected also my approach to my work, to sculpture. I see sculpture, unlike painting, something closer to poetry. It's very minimal. You can use only the elements that are really important. And seeing myself here, learning a new language of sculpture, I wanted to express myself, express my background, express my memories, my childhood in different way. I think one of the things that struck me most was walking in high streets and seeing trees planted in huge, massive pots, you know, which were in concrete. I never really understood why they're not planted straight in the ground. And I start seeing metaphor and symbolism and a lot of things around me. I saw the nature being suffocated, being controlled, you know, by our mind and ideas, rather letting things flow. My first installation was casting old thick trees that I found in a park nearby and casting them into blocks of concrete and making kind of urban forest and dying nature forest. Gradually, my work moved to use symbols in the nature through other images like animals, and later on came trees and other part of the nature. But in the 80s, I concentrated in animals. I was using animals as metaphor to human being, showing like little animal that can survive and conquer big one just by being cunning. And I think that came from childhood stories of Aesop and Krylov fables. The works towards the 90s, the late 80s, early 90s, I gradually added objects and human being as a shadow. When in the 90s, the human being become the subject matter. I don't think we can solve anything in art. You know, we can ask questions. So the question kept raising, and it was almost like vicious circle. Back to nature, then human being, and reaching a point that you feel that you have not developed at all, but in fact, you went miles from where you started.
Your early work came from a lot of different ideas and concepts that were circulating as you moved to a new culture and were challenged by the new language. Was there a turning point where you decided to focus on the process and starting to use different materials like steel and seeing what the boundaries were for a material that was industrial like that? Because it wasn't quite that typical even at the time.
Yeah, I use various materials. I started in metal when I was at school, and then I carry on with founded natural material like pieces of wood and stones. And then I work even in glass, and I work in cloth material, canvases as part of the sculptures. The material, I never really find the material as an objective, as an object for me to explore. The material was always a mean to express my idea. So I always looked for something that can express best what I wanted to say. The material itself as a material never really attracted me or my time and curiosity to explore. That's why I think I move quite a lot between one material to another. But I would say that in the last 15, 20 years, I work in various metal, from bronze, aluminium, corten steel, and stainless steel. It's a kind of concentrated and minimized to metal at the moment because it's the best material to work with my current ideas.
Being on radio, it's hard to visualize your work. Can you walk our audience through and around one of your installations that you're most passionate about so can sort of experience it with you?
I can explain, especially my first big installation was called Evolution and Theory, and based on Darwin evolution and theory of science that was developed, and a lot of the new science that came through the Industrial Revolution during the 19th century fascinated me because I always was interested in the first discovery of things and also things that come from nature, natural forces and power. And the installation contained 250 sculptures. They're all hand-cut from aluminium. All images are taken from one single book that was written in the late 19th century and was a teaching book of physics to students and has an old Victorian illustration that I try to keep them as close to the original by working with magnifying glass and keeping the line, but had to connect them all. The subject of these are from magnetism to light to electricity and gravity and a lot of themes that connect to physics and were developed to where we are now. I think nowadays we live in an era that everything is behind microchip. We can't really see the process. We can't see the magic of science anymore. And the installation itself, you enter the room, you see these hundreds of images cut out. They are flat, but they appear three-dimensional to the spectator, and they are spread in the massive hall and space, and their bases are covered in sand. The sand is one material that unifies most of these installations. Most of my installations have sand, which is giving you a feel of a field or a space like a desert space that is neutral and warm, and yet at the same time unifying all the images together to one strong theme. What you see a part of the experimental images of scientific experimental. You see also the Darwin evolution figures, about 14 figures, from the ape to Homo sapiens. The tallest piece in the installation is the human figure, the last link, which is about 10 feet, almost like 3 meters high. One of my latest installations, called Blackfield, contains 27,000 flowers by now, miniatures of flowers, all hand-painted. There are 900 different species from all over the world. And when you enter the room, you see a field, of course, with the yellow sand, as I described earlier. And you see the black side of it, which is look like a field after a war or burning fire, which represent in a way destruction, and at the same time it give you a feel of sadness or even quite depressing sight. When you start walking around, you gradually realize that all the black color disappears slowly, and you come to the other side, which is full of colors, and I would say it is the size of the optimism. This installation is about death and about life, about hope, about choice. I would say that I chose a flower as a symbol, yet I am not really familiar with so many species of flower names. I'm interested in what they are representing. Flowers for us are a symbol also. We give flower in the happiest moment to people and the saddest moment also. So, as I said earlier, I choose the material and the images not because of what they are made of as much as what they represent and how close they can express my idea.
On another note, as far as interpreting, there were 11 artists invited from different parts of the globe by the musician Peter Gabriel to create visual responses to his songs that he wrote for Us album, released in 1992. Can you tell us about his song and your response, Blood of Eden?
Okay, that's quite a good question. It's quite interesting because I never done till that time any collaboration work as such. I did something in the 80s with a contemporary dance company, something, but it's not similar kind of experience. It's working with someone else. In this case, Peter Gabriel chose the song that he thought that I would be able to respond to his idea, because he was familiar with my work. He's an art collector himself, and he saw my work before. So he reached me, sent me by fax that time the lyrics, and the song called Blood of Eden. It's about uniting men and women. The way I respond to it, I use two figures, a man and woman, in various poses, standing poses mostly. I hand cut them, they're very tiny miniature figures, and joined them together and made them as a part of a shape of an egg, which is a symbol of newborn thing. In between the figures, I made blood vessels and painted them in red, while the figures were black. So I think that image is very simple and very clear, symbolic, as I saw the song. I think Peter Gabriel was happy with it, because later on I was the only artist that was invited to collaborate with him for the video clip of that song, with earlier images and mainly this artwork. And for me, it was a different experience, relating to somebody else's idea but incorporating with my interpretation. We stayed in touch all these years. Recently, he also wrote something for my new book that came out, and I'm happy for that.
And what was your new book that just came out?
So the new book called Human Nature. It's quite a comprehensive book. It's published by Circa Press, that containing mainly 5 installations and the sources for the installation and the details, plus at the end some large outdoor work from part of the world.
Well, we'll look forward to getting a copy here at the university.
I'll be happy to send you.
Well, I'd like to thank you again for being on our show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You are most welcome.
That was sculptor Tzadik Ben David speaking with us from his studio in London. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.